This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. At the bottom of the hour, my guest, I have a very special guest, and it's going to be lots of fun to talk to her. And it's the name of her book is How to Murder a Marriage. And again, I'm looking forward to talking very much to Gabrielle St. George, and that will be at the bottom of the hour. But right now I'm turning to a writer who's, whoa, she has so many credentials to talk about about family relationships, and she's turned it into a major novel. And I am very happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Lynn Reeves. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Joy. Thank you for having me.
Okay, the name of your book is Dangers of an Ordinary Night. Dangers of an Ordinary Night. And as I said, it's a suspense novel, and you have a lot of family relationship things in that book.
Yes, definitely. Well, I'm a family counselor by education, and I turned my attention to fiction when I felt that some of these family stories are pretty undiscussable for people, and that I wanted a vehicle where people could talk about characters, maybe people that were not as close to home. And in this particular one, I explore the issues of addiction in marriage and parenting.
And it's a wow, it is quite a story. So let's talk about how it starts. Of course, it is a, it's also in a way a coming of age story, because it's about two best friends, June Danforth and Tali Carrington, who go missing after being in a school performing arts. And it's, you know, it's a tragic story, and the result of it, how the sort of, you reveal it, how everybody in this small town, I guess it's just south of Boston, are involved in the storyline is fascinating.
Oh, thank you. Yes, the story begins with two teenage girls who go missing after an audition at a performing arts high school in Boston. And it's a fictional school, but it's in a real location, the former Exeter Street Theater on Newbury Street. And I fictionalized that performing arts school. But the girls go missing, and they are found 2 days later. One of them has survived, and one of them has not. But the one that survives doesn't remember everything that led up to what happened. And so the novel is told from the point of view of the mother of the girl who has returned, the reunification therapist whose job it is to help that young girl sort of reacclimate to her family and her surroundings, and the detective who has to figure out what the heck happened in this story. And many, many people come into the orbit of this family who are suspicious by nature, who struggle with addiction, who have secrets and lies that they're trying to cover up. And by the end of the story, we figure all of that out and where everyone's coming from.
As I said, there are a lot of complications and a lot of storylines here, because everyone seems to have a secret in this town.
Yes. Well, I have to say, in my counseling practice, most people would agree that every person has a secret, that we all choose what we will disclose to the people that are not that close to us. But also, it's quite astounding that most people are keeping really important information about their lives and about their feelings from the people that they're even the closest to. And I think that's what intrigues me most, is why do we keep our private struggles from the people that we love the most? And why is it that we feel that some things that we feel and think are just impossible to talk to about with anyone?
Well, of course, your background, I think it's very important that we talk about your background because you are really an international player in the field of family counseling. So you really bring a lot of depth to your writing.
I try to. It's really important to me that my novels don't read as fiction, as nonfiction in disguise. I really do like to inhabit a story and give readers of the genre of domestic suspense or psychological thriller, whichever term you prefer. I like to give them the kind of story they're expecting. And at the same time, it's really important to me that the material that I'm trying to investigate from a family counseling point of view or from a relationship point of view is true and is representative of what people actually struggle with. And in this case, I did a lot of research on families who struggle with addiction. I do see people in my private practice who struggle and whose partners have struggled. I did a lot of research talking to mothers and partners who have real life experience. And I tried to weave that into the story in a way that felt authentic to these characters and that would also allow readers an opportunity to talk about the ways in which these characters handle things, because they don't always handle things the way we would hope, and they don't always handle things in the way ways that are in the best interest of themselves or their family.
And then, of course, in the midst of a tragedy like this, an event like this, everybody has to deal also with the reporters and all of the media that crowd around them.
Yes, and I've actually been a parenting contributor for a Boston morning show for about a decade. And so I also know that media side of things, which is that the media is looking for the story and they're trying to understand it from a regular investigative point of view, but also for a social media presence. And that has an impact on family, right? And that makes it harder for people to feel that they can come forward and talk about how they're feeling and how they're coping.
Because when they have the spotlight shining on them and the reporters go out and they want every little bit and sometimes every little bit of dirt that they can find, it really impacts the story.
Absolutely. In fact, there are some characters in the novel, both teenagers and parents, that are actually eager for that spotlight, that see themselves as people who want to live in the spotlight. There's one parent in particular who has a son at the Performing Arts High School who wishes that the spotlight were on her and her child even more than it is. So I tried to investigate in this story the whole idea of celebrity culture and why it is we seek that and what kind of need is that filling for people to feel famous or to be famous.
Well, that's one of the points that I found very interesting in the novel. I enjoyed exactly that. You're looking at the reporters and you're looking at the media and you're sort of shining a light on them, what they're doing. And as you said, some people wanted this fame of even if it's a bad, about a subject that we don't want, wouldn't normally shy away from being involved in. But if there are people there out there who want that 15 minutes of fame and they go out of their way to get it.
Exactly, exactly. And there are characters in this story who do just that. And that poses a problem for trying to figure out what actually happened. Because once people insert themselves into a story that they may or may not be a part of, it changes the nature of how we understand what happens. So there is a lot going on in this story. I love the idea that what I'm hearing from readers so far is that they feel like it's one of those propulsive kinds of rides of a novel, and at the same time, it has them with very clear opinions about some of these characters.
Oh, definitely. Now, I like psychological suspense for the particular reason that when you get into a book like this, you do forget everything else around you, which is nice in this day and age where we don't want to know. Sometimes you just have to get away from current events and get lost in a book like this. And I think it serves a purpose, this kind of a book.
Absolutely. I once heard William Kent Kruger, talking in one of his interviews, and he's the masterful writer of this Tenderland and Ordinary Grace, and he said that the novel is actually a wonderful vehicle for social experimentation, so to explore a social issue. And I think that that's why when people tell me that they pick up one of my books and they get lost in the story, but they get really connected and in some cases frustrated or hurt or angry by what the characters do, I take that as a success, because what they're doing is they're exploring the issue at hand, in this case, addiction and betrayal in relationships, and they're exploring it through those characters, which means they're exploring it for themselves.
Exactly. That's, and you, so one of the things that when you're reading a book like this, you say, well, is that me, or is that my neighbor, or is that, you know, so you do start in a way to analyze things around you without being too, you know, you're not confrontational, but you start wondering, like, yeah, what's going on, and perhaps paying attention and thinking, well, you know, especially like the parents here, so in some cases, the parents were like, as a parent, you think, well, they should be more, I don't know, involved in what's going on in some ways, but they're very self-centered in other ways. And it's a really a fascinating, as you said, a psychological study.
Yes, and I like when readers ask hard questions like, is it ever okay to leave someone that's addicted to a substance or a behavior? Is it ever okay to keep a secret? Because the secret might do more damage than good if it's revealed. I like having you ask questions like, were these parents selfish and uninvolved, or did they really believe that they should back off and let their children have their own life experiences, right? These are the kinds of questions that I don't think have easy answers. I think the answers are extremely complex and very individual. But if anybody's entertaining them after reading my story, I feel I've done my job.
Well, I think you have. Now, I like the character that you have, the policeman, Detective Fitz Jameson. Tell us how you came out with him.
Yes, well, Fitz does a number of things for me as a character. He is an Irish detective, and I have an Irish background, so I had the fun of exploring my Irish heritage through Fitz and his family, both the upsides of that heritage and some of the downsides. Which I found in my family was keeping some things close to the vest, right? But I also really enjoyed writing Fitz because he, too, had struggled with celebrity. He wanted to pursue a career in music and had been accepted to Juilliard and decided not to go, and I won't spoil why he decided not to go. But he's a super talented musician, and he actually makes himself pay for that by playing music in a bar on a Monday night when there is no one there to hear how talented he is.
Well,
he has a failed celebrity career or a career with fame or a brush with fame, and yet he turns that feeling or that tragedy, the reason why he does not pursue his music, he turns that into a mission, which is to try to solve this particular case. And there are many, many reasons why it's this particular case that he feels compelled to solve.
Exactly.
He was complicated, and he was fun to write. My adult son is a jazz pianist, so I had some terrific conversations with my son over Fitz and his talent.
Well, I enjoyed that. I love that aspect. Usually we don't have, you know, the detectives come in and out, and there's not too much difference from novel to novel. You know, there's usually a partnership, and it's so much the same. But in this case, this was very different, and I enjoyed that very much. I really thought Fitz is a great character.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad. I really love Fitz. I think he's an interesting guy. He too makes some wonderful choices, and he also makes some not so great choices. But he was really fun to write, and I think he's a very complicated person.
which makes him interesting. And yes. particularly as a policeman, it gives him this depth that we don't normally get of our policemen, you know, in storylines. So I found that very intriguing. Now, the question is this is a standalone, or are you planning a series? Because I was wondering when I was reading his character, I was thinking, is he coming back? You know, is there going to be a series out of this?
There may well be another novel for Fitz and Sin. Cynthia Rollins is the reunification therapist or the psychiatrist in the story. And I am toying with an idea that would bring Sin and Fitz back to us in another book.
Well, I thought so, because as I'm reading it, really, as I said, because, well, of course, I love pianists, and it's always been important in my life, pianists. And so when I get a detective who can actually play the piano and actually has depth, I sort of honed in on him. I mean, I like Cynthia, but I thought, you know, gee, I would like to know more about him. I would like him to go on. So it's funny.
I'm glad to hear that. Well, he's not in my very next novel, but he may appear in future novels. My very next novel, due out next year, has a whole other cast of characters.
Well, when you come out with somebody as good as that, that's the important thing. When, I read so many books, I can't even begin to tell you how many books. I get like 4 or 5 books a day from major publishers. So I'm getting lots of books. And sometimes, like your book, I will get maybe, you know, months ahead of time, many months ahead of time. And when I remember a character, you know, months later, and I can remember him, and I remember the details of, you know, what he did, and, you know, what he was like, that is a character that is, he's a treasure.
Oh, thank you. That is such a kind compliment. I really appreciate that. Characters are really a lot to me in writing, because there are so many elements of craft that are critical, of course, but the depth of character, and that these people would feel real to you, and once you had been introduced to them, you wouldn't forget them, is super important to me.
It is. You know, something like that, as I said, I think I must have gotten the book like maybe 3 months ago. You know, I get it really early. And then I read a lot of books in between, a lot of books. And then I pull out the book and I look at the cover, I look at the book. And if I can do that without opening the book, and I can immediately remember his name, Fitz Jameson. I mean, this shows you that you created a really great character. And I personally hope he comes back, because I will read about him.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I'll see what adventure is in store for him in the future.
Okay. Well, I think you have a great imagination, and you have great resources in finding out all sorts of wonderful stories from the people that you get to counsel and talk to. Now, as you said, you have a book coming out next year, so you'll be back on Joy on Paper next year.
Oh, I would love to.
And we will keep this up. And meanwhile, I will be thinking about Fitz Jameson. And do you have a website you want people to go to?
Yes. So I'm writing this novel under Lynn Reeves, but my full name is Lynn Reeves Griffin, and people can find me under lynngriffin.com. So lynngriffin.com is where you'll find me. And it'll share with you some of my nonfiction work, as well as this new novel of domestic suspense.
And also, I think you have a link there to your counseling services, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, people, you know, as I said, suspense, psychological suspense, I mean, it's very popular right now. And I think one of the reasons, certainly through this pandemic year, is it does, in a way, you can sort of enjoy other people's problems. And then not.
Oh, we immerse ourselves in those things that we need to figure out, even if it's someone else's problems for the moment, right?
Exactly.
But hopefully it'll get people to be bringing this conversation around addiction into the light in their own families. That's my hope.
Okay, and now this is a NaNoWriMo month, National Novel Writing Month, and authors are always asking me, or people who are just starting off you writing there say, well, what, you know, what books should I read? So I will recommend this book because this is a great book. If you are interested in writing psychological suspense, you get a lot of it in this great book. So again, thank you so much, Lynn, for being on Joy on Paper today. And the name of the book, again, is Dangers of an Ordinary Night. And you can go to lynngriffin.com, right, for more information.
That's exactly right.
Okay. Well, again, thank you, and I look forward to talking to you next year, okay?
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. Bye-bye now, Lynn.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, we're going to go to, let's go to a book buzz, and we'll play Devon Miller's Book Buzz, and then commercials, and we'll be back. I've got a Canadian author today. Oh, I love Canada.
Hey everyone, it's Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety Tock Lock children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. November is here, and it's known as a time to give thanks for all that we have. And in the story of I Love You, Fiorello, Flaws and All, the main characters were thankful and happy for the life they had, but one day, the life they knew had changed. Written by Cindy A. Bell and illustrated by Emily House, I Love You, Fiorella, Flaws and All tells the story of Fiorella and Mama Rose, who get left at an animal shelter. Because their owner left them, it makes Fiorella wonder if she did anything wrong for them to get left at the animal shelter. Inspired by Lucy, who's a very special dog within the author's life, the story explores themes that children can experience, such as rejection and unacceptance, but it also showcases one's unconditional love. The author, Cindy A. Bell, who's also a children's book enthusiast, believes that books can invite meaningful conversations about big feelings that children may encounter. Just like how Mama Rose loves Fiorella, I think readers will love Fiorella after reading this adorable and charming story. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
At Joy on Paper, November is officially National Geographic Month. Since 1888, Nat Geo has been dedicated to bringing stories to readers that will impact our lives, open your eyes to the beauty of nature, celebrate the diversity of mankind, and encourage readers to dream about the world beyond their own windows. So join us as we celebrate National Geographic Month with a selection of our favorite interviews with Nat Geo writers, photographers, and editors from the outer space to the deepest depths of the ocean. We have a book that is just right for you. This year, when you get together for Thanksgiving Day, bring a Nat Geo book and turn it into a yearbook by having all the guests sign it. Make it a family tradition. And be thankful for the joy of reading and sharing a beautiful, illustrated National Geographic book. It's more than a book. It's pure joy.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I have my next guest, I hope. Not yet? Okay, she's going to call in any minute, and it's going to be fun to talk to her because this is a fun book. Finally, I get a book that makes me laugh, and I love it. So I'm just waiting for her to call in from Canada. My goodness. Hey, Big Ed in the control room, tell me, what is our state bird? Huh? Do you know our state bird? Did you know they're changing our state bird?
If I had to guess, there's so many of them. How about a pelican?
No, it's a mockingbird, and they want to get rid of the mockingbird.
Did the mockingbird do something offensive?
I guess so. Must have mocked somebody. Okay, well, I think I am going to have a very special Canadian bird. Hi!
Yeah.
Okay, well, this is very funny. We were just talking about the state bird here in Florida, and they are going to change it. And right now, the state bird is the mockingbird. But I have, and they want nominations for favorite birds. So I am going to nominate Canadian snowbirds because wouldn't that
That's
be perfect?
Perfect. That is absolutely perfect.
Well,
oh my gosh.
They just started the petition this week. They want to change from the mockingbird because obviously the mockingbirds have been mocking the wrong people. So I thought, well, I have Gabrielle St. George on today, and I can ask her if she thinks that the Canadian snowbird would be a good bird for Florida.
Yeah, that's literally perfect. And there, we have so many desperate Canadian snowbirds up here who've missed going south to Florida for two winters now, for most of them.
I know. And we miss you people because you bring money. And it has been very, very sad down here for us because we're, you know, I'm right here in Clearwater, Florida, which is like the home of Canadian snowbirds.
The Mecca.
I mean, like, you know, it is your paradise. And whoa, and you can't come. This is still crazy, but meanwhile, we are down here, but we get to read your book, your books, but particularly this one, How to Murder a Marriage. Now, I'm going to tell you, I get so many books, and very few of them make me smile, let alone laugh out loud.
Oh.
So when I do get, well, you listen, I get some really, you know, this has been pandemic-y times. And
yeah,
I get
heavy stuff.
Oh, I get heavy stuff. I even got two that were really, really bad because they were about leprosy, new versions of leprosy. And I thought, no, this is not, I don't need this. I need a laugh. And as a matter of fact, I sent out to all of the publicists who send me books. I said, please send me something funny. I can't take it anymore. And then I get How to Murder a Marriage, the Ex-Whisperer files. And I said, oh, goody.
Oh, I'm so glad. I love, you know, they say, I mean, I've read it so many times, comedy is the most difficult thing to write. And I think if you can write it, you should.
It must be, because I can tell you, out of the, you know, as I said, I get about four or five books a day. I used to get four or five books a week. Now I'm getting them every day.
Wow.
And I can think of only five that have made me laugh all year long.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And maybe even writers are, you know, finding it difficult to feel funny.
I don't know.
Tough, right?
Yeah, well, but
but
you've managed to do it. Of course, Canadian. So, you know, I'm from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. I'm a Youper. And so we always laugh at Canadians anyway. So
that's true. But, you know, I'm so fascinated with where you're from because I'm like straight across the inland sea from you on Lake Huron.
Oh, well.
I'm in Southampton. So we get so many Michiganders coming on their, like, mind-blowing boats, and they stay for a few weeks or even a few months in the summer, and they're obviously the greatest. But I mean, when I look out across our ocean here, I'm looking right at you, or where you used to be. A lot of similarities in the landscape, you know?
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, you know, being from up there, it's just, it's a different world, absolutely. And I love Canada. I spent a lot of time in Canada, particularly at Blue Lake in Quebec. Some of the best fishing in the world is in that little lake. So I just always so happy to talk to a Canadian.
But and, you fish then?
Oh, I fish. Oh.
Oh, woman, you have to come up here and have a drink with me sometime. I don't fish, but I'll sit with you and read a book. But we have some of the best fishing in Ontario because I live on a farm back onto the Saugeen River. And after the Niagara River, it's the biggest river in Ontario. And right now it's the steelhead and salmon, and they're just going crazy here. But it's some of the best fishing like you could ever imagine.
Well, I'm
known for that.
I love to fish. I've been fishing, you know, since I was a little toddler sitting next to my daddy. And so, oh, yeah, I will come up there. I don't know if they open the border. Goodness gracious, I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, hopefully that's happening soon. You're going to have the snowbirds are going to go extinct. They're going to lose it.
Yeah, they'll all be in a nut house.
Yeah.
You need this. And it's so beautiful down here right now. It's so gorgeous. I don't want to rub it in. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about this book, How to Murder a Marriage, The Ex-Whisperer Files. I love the cover. It's very distinctive. You get it, and you never forget it. And then you have just developed a wonderful character. I love Gina. Tell us about her.
Well, she's turning 50. She's in the book, she turns 50. She's been divorced for a few years. Her four kids have fled the nest. And she's starting over. She's pushing the reset button on the next stage of her life. And that's scary. And a lot of people are in that situation, you know, where we're reinventing ourselves or just rediscovering our old selves. But it's so common now. And I really couldn't find, I love mysteries, always have, since my little girl days reading Nancy Drew Under the Bed Covers, and I love mystery series, that's my favorite, and I couldn't find one that was about me, that was in my lane, that I could relate to, a woman, you know, a mature woman in that age range, in her 50s, who was real, because a lot of us swear and, you know, have...
Oh, no, you don't. Oh, my goodness.
I'm talking about my friends. And, you know, smoke pot and want to fall in love again and want to start new careers and all kinds of... Or want to retire and travel the world solo, whatever it might be. It's not over. It's just the beginning. I couldn't find mystery series with a character like that. I couldn't. I hope they're out there and I missed them.
Oh, I don't think there are that many out there.
No.
And certainly none as funny as this one. Well, Gina Malone, I really like her. And I love the way the book starts because it starts off with a list. And I am a person who loves lists. I just love lists. I do lists. I make lists. I used to drive, I homeschooled my boys. I used to drive them crazy with lists because I always had lists. And so this starts off with the 6 most stressful life events.
Yeah.
And I you check them off one at a time or more or less. And I don't know if I should, you want to tell them or do you want me to?
No, you go ahead.
Okay, well, divorce. Now that's a biggie. That's like one of the big stresses. Death of a loved one, yeah. Moving house, oh my gosh, the idea of it.
Be number one.
Yeah. Becoming the victim of a crime, yeah, well, yeah. I noticed that in the book we have a little bit of stalking, and I can relate to that. I can tell you a funny story about that in my own life. And dismissal from work, although if you happen to be Lee Child, you can make something great out of it because, you know, he was fired when he was 39. He was really mad, and he decided to write a book. So that turned out okay for him. And imprisonment. Well, I am glad. Although I did break somebody out of jail once, I have not been in jail myself. And I mean, really, I did break somebody out of jail.
Great. I want to read that book.
Yeah, that is a fun book. As I said, it started off right away. Well, I got this list. I said, oh, this is going to be a good, you know, as I said, when I get as many books as I do, people now really have to catch me. I can't read all of those books. I will select them, and by page 5 or 6, I better like this book. And yeah. I like this book after the second paragraph. I liked the first one. I said divorce. I never went through that, so I don't know about that one. Death of a loved one. Well, of course, that's a terrible thing. Moving house. That got to me the minute you said moving house. The horrors of that when we moved from Houston to Florida, because I, at the time I had over 6,000 books and I had to get rid of 3,000.
That's killer.
Yeah, that was a killer. Being a victim of crime, well, a simple crime like ex somebody stalking you, or an unhappy person. But nobody's ever dismissed me from work because I have always been the boss. That's one thing. I have made sure.
That's a good thing.
Since I was a kid, I had one company after another. And I started with my first company when I was 8 years old. And I have had companies all of my life. And I dismiss people. So nobody could dismiss me.
Yeah, that's good.
That's good, huh?
Yeah.
But you must. So I said to myself, I like this author. I said, I just like her. I like her. I like her. She's making me happy.
Oh, I'm so glad. That's like the best, highest compliment I could ever receive. Literally, I my calling is to be an entertainer. That's what I've felt my whole life. So my reason for writing the book, and when I feel, was this book a success? If it makes people feel good, I'm a success. It worked. I accomplished exactly what I set out to do, regardless of what the sales turn out to be or anything else. If it makes people feel good, makes people feel happy, if I can make someone laugh, I did it.
Well, you certainly have made me laugh, and you're going to make a lot of other people laugh. So the story really is so cleverly done, and as the ex-whisperer and best-selling relationship book author of Gal Guides, I think you have a winner here in this book.
Oh, thank you so much. That means everything coming from you, truly, that does.
Well,
I just wanted to say here also that it's the first book in a 3-book contract, you know, which will likely be extended. But all the books start with a list. And I'm just madly head down finishing, I have 4 weeks left, the first draft of the second book. It also starts with a list, top 10 reasons to skip your high school reunion. I mean, someone could get murdered.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Right? Yeah.
And this other thing I love about the book is you have letters. Now, I love letters in a book. Ever since I read, did you read Dorothy Sayers' Lord Peter Wimsey books?
Yeah.
And there are letters in there, particularly from from his mother, the Dowager Duchess. And I love letters in a book. And so you have that. So you have everything in this book that I love.
Man, I struck it.
You did. You did. I mean, you really, really did. And I am so glad to hear that you've got a contract for more because, well, as I said, it's just a fun book. And it's, you know, we need some fun in our lives. It's nice to, you know, have a mystery, but why not laugh about it? And we have, of course, you know, as I said, I was happy also to see that you were from Canada because this radio station particularly has a great relationship with Canada because we have been hosting Canada Calling and for years because when the Canadians are down here, they are looking for, news from up north. They want to know mostly about if you're having a blizzard. And we had Pryor Smith, who was the host of Canada Calling, and he was here at our station.
Oh, fantastic. Listen, I have a question for you. I want to know, do these Canadians call you Patty with a Z?
Oh, they better not call me Patty with a Z.
That's how we say it.
I know.
Patty with a Z.
Patty with a Z. Oh, when I was in England, and that's why I usually go around, when I introduce myself to people, I shake hands and I say, Patsy, well, I used to shake hands. I can't shake hands now. Hi, I'm Patsy with a Z. And I had to do that in England. And they'd say, what? I said, don't you dare, because I lived in England for quite a while. Don't go Zedding me around.
Right. Patsy with a Z or Patsy with a Z, but you answer to both.
Well, yes, but then, you know, you might not get on the program the next time, you know. Yeah, never know. Yeah. Well, of course, if you were a man and you were wearing a yellow blazer and plaid pants, then I would let you on because, of course, we love to make fun of Canadians. Maybe it's, I don't know, perhaps it's a fresh air up there. I think you do have a good sense of humor. You also make fun of everything. We're very,
of course.
You know, we have to, you know. So it doesn't matter where we are when we make jokes. We need to. And we don't mind people making jokes about us because people make jokes about Youpers all the time. And it's not true. That we have no sense of humor. As a matter of fact, we're very witty people, and we are very proud of that.
Oh, I know.
Well, it is.
Fun is important.
It is. It is. It's just so nice to laugh for, because I've been having a lot of serious books, and I am really happy to have an author who's got a sense of humor.
You know what? I'm like, so enamored right now with the Bookstagrammer community, you know, on Instagram. These Bookstagrammers they're just so ridiculously supportive of authors and books. And just the nature of Instagram, most of the Bookstagrammers are quite young women, like in their 20s, most, some in their 30s. There might be a couple in their 40s, very few. And many, many of them have reviewed my book, and the reviews have been fabulous. And I'm surprised because I really thought with my main character being 50 that it would appeal to women in that age range. But all these young women are head over heels in love with Gina, the main character. And I keep getting like personal messages from them and then in their reviews. And I'm so surprised by that. And I think the bridge is the humor. I think it's just that she's funny and everyone wants that so bad that they just love her. And it has, like, gone beyond the age thing. Just hasn't come into it. And I got to say, that surprised me. But I'm happily surprised.
Well, I don't know. It's just something, perhaps it's something about Canadians. We have a little bit to, we're going to play a little Canadian thing for you. Just hold on and listen, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, you just hold on. Do we have it ready?
Throughout the pandemic, you could fly. It wasn't easy because a lot of the flights were canceled and there were all kinds of restrictions, but you could fly. But the land border crossings, all of them, all the way across from the Atlantic to the Pacific, were closed, and they were closed until yesterday morning. They were closed for 18 months.
Wow.
But they announced about 2 weeks ago that the land border crossings would be reopened. The proviso is you have to be double vaccinated to drive across. But there's one minor fly in the ointment. If you're going to go across for, say, a day or two or 3 days to visit with friends or relatives, because of a bizarre Canadian regulation, which is now under review and I suspect will be dropped in the next couple of weeks, but as of right now, if you go across the border into the States and you come back, you have to get a COVID test. And that COVID test can cost you in the range of $200 to $300. Oh. So seeing a family of four was driving across to visit with relatives for a few days, it would cost you $1,200 roughly.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, that, as I said, that is from our host, Pryor Smith of Canada Calling. Did you know that? Did you know
they? I'm going there for Christmas. We're gonna go to Greece, but I'm gonna have to pay that $300 test when I come back. But I mean, that's just one person. But my four kids were coming back. That would be $1,200 right there. And they don't. We don't. Canada's not accepting the lesser test, which they do accept in the UK and everything. It's got to be the full blown one, which is $300. And I think there's a lot of pressure, mostly because from the snowbirds, but there's a lot of pressure on the government right now to drop it. I mean, if you're double vaxxed, come on, it's got it. That's like overkill. So hopefully that comes to an abrupt halt because it, yeah, no one's going to go cross border shopping right now for Christmas.
No,
say that.
No, yeah. it's going to be devastating. And, well, it is. It's hurting us here because, you know, we were used to having big Canadian families coming down here with all the kids, buying all this wonderful stuff to go to the beach spending a fortune in our area. And we love Canadian dollar. And, of course, you can't do it. It's crazy.
No, I know. And, you know, the real estate prices, like, particularly, well, all over Canada and all over Ontario, have gone nutty. But where I am, it is a tourist area. And so many people, and I've talked to them, too, but then I have friends who are real estate agents in the area. And these snowbirds, who after they couldn't go, like, second winter, and then now are iffy about this one, have been snatching up vacation properties here because they're afraid they're going to have to sell their condo or home in Florida. So it has ripple effect everywhere.
It does.
So this has actually made, it sounds good, oh, all the real estate being snatched up. It's not good for local people who are being priced out of their home market, which is what's happening. So lots of ripple effect to it, you know, all around.
And of course, normally I think you would probably come to America and, well, America. Oh, sorry about that. United States, because you're a part of North America. But you would come and do some book tours and have some events and get out there and do book shows in New York City or something. And you aren't doing that.
No, that whole section of the industry has changed a lot. I think there's been some good things in that, at first everyone scrambled. We can't go on book tours. We can't have book launches. What do we do? And then everyone kind of sorted out the virtual thing. And some people still aren't, in love with it. But the upside is that if you couldn't attend the book party or book launch or book reading or signing in New York City because you lived in Milwaukee, now you can go. You can go online. But it's even this whole book shortage coming up, it's a real thing. And everyone's going to make less money this holiday season. The authors, publishers, bookstores.
I know it's so difficult, and of course, I will tell you one thing. I will promote this book like crazy because I think so many of my listeners will love it because they really are looking for a book that will make them laugh. And also, I just love looking at the cover. They came out with a great cover, and it's called "How to Murder a Marriage: The Ex-Whisperer Files," and it is first of a trilogy or maybe a quadrilogy or maybe, a dozen or cheaper by the dozen. We'll have 13. There's going to be a lot of these. I hope there's a lot of these books.
Oh, Patsy with a Z, you're a dream. Thank you so much.
Well, I think you are absolutely adorable. And tell us, what is your website? How do you want people to find you?
Yeah, it's my name, Gabrielle St. George. That's GabrielleSTGeorge.com. And today is Pub Day, release day, my book birthday. And it's available everywhere books are sold. Everywhere, all through the States, up here in Canada, everywhere. Yay!
So exciting. Yay, exactly. Okay, everybody, really, you need a laugh. Get this book. You need a good little mystery, too. You get it all in this delightful book, and then you get to go and go to Gabrielle's website, and you can see if she has some Zoom events, because I'm sure she's funny on the Zoom as well. And again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. You are a treat. You are you really, I'm telling you, you stand out from so many authors because you have a sense of humor, and it's important and it's wonderful, and I really appreciate it.
Oh, Patsy, I could cry. I'm so grateful for you. Thank you so much.
Well,
you said, and having me on the show, it's such an honor, and I just appreciate this so deeply. Thank you, thank you.
Okay, well, we will have you back as soon as the next book is published, and meanwhile,
right.
I will keep promoting this one. To everybody, I want them to get this book and to also buy it as a gift, a perfect gift for every woman, every woman you know, because they will just, they'll start laughing when they get to two or three in the list, and hopefully they will all stay never get to number six where they have to check it off. But you never know, you know.
No.
You never know.
Desperate time.
Okay, and you're going to Greece, huh?
Yeah, my kids live in London, but I think we're going to go to Crete for Christmas. So,
oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you have a fantastic time. Stay safe. And let's hope this is over. And then you actually can come down here to Florida. And even if you don't have a book release, if you are a snowbird and you come down here, you can come to the studio. I don't care if it's a release date or not. You're welcome here anytime. How about that?
That is beautiful. Thank you. I have passion for Key West. So as soon as I can get down there, I'll be down there, girl.
Okay, perfect. I'll have the drink ready. Okay. All right.
Thank you. Take good care.
Okay. Thanks now. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Oh, wow. Oh, she's good. She's good. You see this? I'm laughing. I'm so happy to talk to somebody like this. Oh, it's wonderful. And thank Big Ed so much for this little clip we had here about Canada calling. Well, I think we should name our bird, our new bird. They've got some funny birds they want to name. I had thought it would have been the pelican or the flamingo or something. I didn't realize it was the mockingbird. The mockingbirds are very nice. I like mockingbirds. I used to know one that sang in the key of E flat. And a mockingbird singing in the key of E flat is one of my favorite songs, so you never know. But I was happy that we get to talk to a Canadian, and I think they're going to put it up on the state thing or the whatever, that we can nominate our favorite bird. So if it's not the Canadian goose, they come down here, we can do a snowbird. Okay, well, as I said, it's NaNoWriMo time, and please, all of you people who are writing, go to my website, radio-joy on paper, and click on Jim Lamb Literary Gems, because he has there a description of all sorts of literary devices that will help you to write your book this month during National Novel Writing Month. NaNoWriMo is going full speed. My goddaughter, Kanisha, I don't think she's doing it this year because she just had a baby, and he is so sweet and adorable, and I'm sure she is just sitting there right now hugging and kissing his little toes. But Kanisha has done it many times, and she always finished and wrote her novel in 1 month, and you can do it too. Because remember what I always tell you, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed. Thank you, Ed, so much. He saluted me, I saluted him, and I thank him for pulling that clip out about the Canadian border. Oh, gosh, I hope this can start coming down. Everybody, have a great day, and go EHS if you need solar energy. Bye-bye now.